This is Gorse Culture Podcast, the HR detective agency where we solve one piece of the people puzzle at a time. Helping you crack the HR code, here's Joe Gorse.
Hello, my name's Joe. Welcome to Gorse Culture Podcast. Each week I invite industry experts to join me in the HR detective agency. We will feature a new case study, a real-life challenge that managers and HR professionals face every day. We'll examine the facts, we'll tap into specialist expert knowledge, and together we'll find actionable insights and solutions. But before we investigate today's case study, I want to take a moment to welcome my guest, Eleanor Wilde. Eleanor, I'm absolutely thrilled that you're here. You and I know each other already. We worked together for quite some time. But I would like you to introduce yourself to our listeners, and I'd like you to tell them about your journey, not only into HR, but also into your interest in wellbeing and what your passion is.
Okay. My name's Eleanor Wilde, and I have worked in healthcare in some way or another for my entire adult life. I did 2 years in private healthcare before moving into the NHS and worked in various administration roles. So I started out in a frontline service as a ward administrator and got to really work in the thick of things and sort of see what the NHS does day to day. And then after that, I moved into a corporate facing role that was in childcare and wellbeing support for staff. It was in that role that I became really passionate about the NHS in its totality, but also how we support the individuals that keep the NHS running every single day. While I was there, I also decided that I wanted to do a little bit more, and I decided to pursue a degree. So I did an access to higher education course and then went and did a business degree whilst working part-time in the wellbeing service. In my second year, the pandemic hit. So I had a very difficult few years of juggling children and study and working in a wellbeing service in what was a very difficult time in a wellbeing service for the NHS. And then I started working part-time during one of my school breaks in the Equality, Diversity and Inclusion team, looking specifically at the disability project and how we support people with disabilities and long-term health conditions. So it's fair to say that wellbeing and inclusion in the NHS is probably my passion. And then I started working as an OD facilitator on the project that you were working on at the time, on smarter working and smarter spaces. And that looks how we move to a modern blended approach to hybrid working, to home working, to mobile working. And then just in the last few months, I moved from the organizational development facilitator role into the project manager role in that project. So I'm now running the Smarter Spaces program.
Brilliant. That is a huge shift from working on a ward as a ward administrator all the way through to project management. But knowing you throughout every single one of those, at the forefront of your mind is, how does this come across to the individual? How is this going to affect that person? So just picking up on COVID and the pandemic, what kind of things were happening in the care sector? What kind of things were you coming across?
So at the time, I was a childcare coordinator and a wellbeing coordinator. So it's just a very small team that supports nearly 4,000 staff for wellbeing and 10,000 staff for childcare support. So in terms of the wellbeing service, there was obviously the things you would expect. People were struggling with low mood, people were scared. In the beginning, people were really terrified. But also, working as a childcare support service coordinator, there was lots of issues that you wouldn't have envisaged. Obviously, we had a lot of key workers, and we had a lot of nurseries and things closing their doors that shouldn't have been. So we spent a lot of time in the early parts of the pandemic just trying to find emergency childcare so that our key workers could go to work. But we also had, people were very, very scared for their children. So our key workers who were sending their children to school, or the ones who were at home and isolated from their friends, there was no good ship to be in, was there, in the beginning part of the pandemic. So we put a lot of support together for parents for how to speak to their children about COVID, how to access emergency childcare and that sort of thing, whilst also supporting staff to look after their own personal wellbeing, which was very, very challenging at that time. I have three children, as you know. So for me, I was homeschooling three children. I was homeschooling myself for a second year business degree. And I was working about 45 hours a week instead of the 22 and a half that I was contracted to. We did do lots of very innovative things. We completely redesigned both of our services so that they could be delivered virtually. So we started doing things like peer support groups for parents, and we worked with therapists to develop staff support and therapy service for our staff so that we had support when we needed it. Mm-hmm. Lots and lots of things like that. We also, throughout the pandemic, had to look at things like financial support for people. Obviously, as NHS staff, we were very fortunate that we were all still employed and there was no risk to our jobs, but lots and lots of people had partners who were laid off or furloughed. So we had to look at a really wide variety of problems and just kind of the being available and seeing what were the matters arising. Another quite upsetting thing, obviously, during the pandemic was the number of domestic violence cases mm-hmm. that were brought to our attention. So we had to really make sure that we were supporting people in the right ways for domestic abuse and making sure, for example, that people who didn't have a safe home working environment could still access a site, even though they could do their job from home. That sort of thing. It was very, very varied, but it was all very reactive at that time. I think after about the first 6 months, we were better at being a little bit more proactive and kind of figuring out what we might need. Hmm. But those first 6 months, we were just surviving. Whatever the calls were that came in, we dealt with them.
And absolutely tough. It was such a tough time, wasn't it? And domestic violence in itself, it's awful to deal with. But the things that you and the team that you worked in put in place was just a vast amount of resources that you managed to source. And a lot of them were free. You were able to source things that were free. So the well-being in itself and that function is so valuable for an organisation, for the NHS and for at that time in the pandemic itself, absolutely vital. None of us would have got through without having a well-being function. But there are a lot of organisations who don't have that. Mm-hmm. We have got a people puzzle okay. that we need to try and work through today. So I'm going to read that out to you now.
Okay.
So, dear Gorse Culture Podcast, I have a limited budget, which makes it challenging to provide a comprehensive wellbeing package. I want to be supportive, but I don't want to throw money away. How can I measure what's going to work and if it will be cost effective? From a HR enthusiast. Now, what I need to point out is that this is from a small business owner mm-hmm. who doesn't have their own HR function. They outsource their payroll and they outsource their HR transactional things like sickness, or if they need to do any mediation or anything like that, everything goes out. So the only people that deal with any HR matters, whether it's well-being or whether it's coaching, comes from the owner or the senior managers. It seems quite straightforward to me, but there's a limited budget for that business owner. Also, reading between the lines, I think they want to look at how they can save money. So I'm guessing that there's some kind of impact due to sickness, absence, or the well-being function will be able to fill. So if we looked at budget first, the cost of implementing well-being initiatives such as wellness programs and all these big things, mental health support, EAP, they can be a significant barrier. Is it possible to really put well-being support in place on a budget?
Absolutely. So obviously, working for an NHS service, there's lots of things that we benefit from that a small business wouldn't, like staff discounts, but there's lots and lots of things that you can do that are very, very cheap or they're cost neutral. So for example, one of the things that staff used to absolutely love pre-pandemic, and I think I no longer work in the wellbeing service, but they are bringing it back now, is massage sessions for staff. So once a month, we used to have a masseuse come in. He used one of the rooms that we had available on site. He brought all of his own equipment and we allowed people to take their breaks flexibly on that day so that on their break, they could actually go and have a full body massage at work, but using their own time. They paid for it themselves directly with the masseuse, but they felt valued. So that's a really, really good cost neutral one. And we didn't even do the bookings for it. We set the room up for the masseuse and gave his contact details out. So staff contacted him directly. All of the finance side of things was done completely outside of our office. That didn't cost us anything, but was really, really well received. I also think there's a lot about just putting it on your agenda, you know, talking about it and actually openly and obviously supporting it. I think the work that I did recently on the disability policy was really eye-opening, because actually that inclusion side of things just really goes hand in hand with well-being. So we actually developed quite a trailblazing policy, and it was a little bit of a controversial one at the time. Because what we've done is we've allowed people to take disability leave and it's reduced sickness overall.
Explain more about that.
So disability leave is leave that can be taken for the routine maintenance of a disability or long-term health condition. So it's outside of sickness and it's outside of annual leave. But what we allowed is up to 5 days for somebody who's declared that they have a disability or long-term health condition for the routine maintenance. So for example, if you've got somebody who is diabetic and needs to go to a foot clinic appointment twice a year, they could take a half day's disability leave to go to that appointment.
Okay.
So when you've got somebody who's got lots of appointments, disability long-term health conditions often come with lots of appointments. What you find is that people use up all of their annual leave and then they don't actually have any time away from work because that's not a good use of annual leave. So they end up being burnt out and then off sick. Sometimes it's related to the disability and sometimes it's not. Sometimes they're just exhausted because they've used all their holiday to go to hospital appointments.
Annual leave is vital, absolutely vital to rest and recuperate from work and just get away from that space.
Absolutely. And I think when people are using leave for hospital appointments, especially, they're not even necessarily going to be taking a couple of days at a time. You know, it's going to be the odd day here and there throughout the year. So there's no real meaningful rest at all. So giving people the ability to take disability leave, not only has it actually given people the psychological safety to say that they have a disability or long-term health condition. Prior to the disability policy, 6% of staff in the organisation had declared they had a disability or long-term health condition. And within the few months following the policy, it had gone up to 9%. And I believe it's still on the rise. So it has given people the, like I say, the psychological safety to say, well, actually, this organisation supports me. And I'm now going to declare it. And we know that that's a more realistic figure. So there's disability leave, but there's also a category of sickness that is disability related. So that if somebody is off sick with their disability, it doesn't necessarily count towards what most HR professionals will call a trigger point. Mm-hmm. But we've changed that language now to well-being checkpoint because trigger is one of those things that's it's quite negative it's language. Very. And that's not really helpful either, is it? If you are off sick and you're struggling with your health, it can be classed as a reasonable adjustment to not count somebody's sickness towards their well-being checkpoint.
And that's within this policy that you've developed?
Yeah, so if somebody's off with cold and flu symptoms, then obviously that would still absolutely count towards their absence. However, if you've got somebody who's known to have persistent migraines and is going to need time off once every 2 months for a migraine, and that's a condition that's known about, it's not appropriate for that person to always be going through a well-being process or a trigger process, a formal HR process for their attendance for something that's completely unavoidable. It's not patternable absence. It's not, you know, it's not anything that they have any control over. That's a direct byproduct of a long-term health condition. So it's classed as a reasonable adjustment to not count that against them in that way.
That's absolutely incredible.
Obviously, it does cost you a little bit extra in terms of letting people go to the appointments. But the reality is we will probably save money overall. And the other thing is you can plan for appointments. If somebody's taking disability leave, that can be planned within the team. If somebody's run out of leave and is taking time off for hospital appointments and is phoning in sick, or if somebody ends up off sick, that's a lot harder to plan for. And in a smaller team and organisation, you need to know who's going to be in and when as much as possible, don't you, so that you can cover it. So that's an easy one.
That's really innovative. And so that's reduced the sickness numbers as well.
Yes. Because people are just not burnt out. And I think the other thing is somebody with a disability, a long-term health condition who feels well supported, particularly somebody who has something that they've struggled with for a long time or they're used to having to use their leave for, that individual feels valued by that organisation. That individual feels that they care about them as a person. And actually, they're going to do everything in their power, aren't they, to be at work and to stay working for an organisation that supports them in that way.
Yeah, absolutely. I love it. Amazing stuff. One of the things that occurs to me with today's people puzzle is that from an organisation that has no dedicated HR function or wellbeing champion and possibly no dedicated resource to be able to look at this, what strategies could they put in place to be able to cater for employees' diverse needs and not risk the element of tokenism? So this policy that you're talking about, that absolutely could be something that's looked at and implemented on a scale that fits the organisation rather than a lift and shift. And then there's the masseuse as well. There's things like that. But what could they ingrain within the organisation rather than just a masseuse or yoga activities or somebody coming in to do a one-off wellbeing session? What can they do to make that integrated change?
During the pandemic, we started giving advice around things like safeguarding your walk to work and leaveism and presenteeism and not working through your lunch at your desk and things like that. So those are just some really, really basic key things that you can do to start with. And that needs to be role modeled from the top. So that means that this person who's written in needs not to be, eating at their desk. There needs to be a dedicated staff rest space within the office if it's an office-based workplace. And if it's a home-based scenario, then what I would suggest is protected time over lunch. So my husband's organization, they have a well-being hour every day at lunchtime, and it's protected, and nobody's allowed to put any meetings in that hour. So that's their regular 30-minute lunch, and then that's another 30 minutes for them to look after their own well-being. And that's absolutely brilliant. And most of them don't choose to do anything spectacular. They just don't have meetings booked in that time. Again, a really, really small thing that you can do that just safeguards people's ability to look after their own well-being. You can't make people look after their own well-being, but you can facilitate that. So that's a really, really good way to do that. There's also organisations that do one well-being, half day a month, for example, where people can decide to do whatever they want with that half day. I recently did a consultancy project for 5 CCGs as they formed to be one ICB, and one of those organisations did this well-being half day per month. And when we surveyed all of the staff about what would be helpful, what they thought would contribute to their well-being, they all said, well, it's what this one organization's already doing. We all want it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And it was really good because obviously the precedent had been set already. And they said, it works. It just works. People are really responsible about when they take it. People are really responsible about not all taking, Friday the 5th afternoon off. Office is empty. And it works well. But lots of people choose to use the time to volunteer and things like that as well. So there's things, that you can do to kind of, like I say, facilitate people's ability to look after their well-being. Again, it's really role modelling good behaviour. So if the manager or the owner of this organisation, talks about it and lives it and actually looks after their own well-being, it encourages others to do the same. But there does need to be some sort of commitment to that. Mm. I think as well, the well-being service that I worked for wasn't a funded service other than our salaries. We didn't have money to spend on lots of things. But what we did do was really just take advantage of how much amazing resources out there. So we had a SharePoint page that we set up that was very, very, very comprehensive and just signposted to a lot of the free resource that's available. So for example, Mind, the charity, has got an unbelievable amount of resource available. And they've got groups and they've got workbooks and they've got free packs that organisations can get as well and hand out to people. You get your first 50 packs free that shall tell you how to look after your workplace well-being. There's things like that. Timson's, the dry cleaners that cut keys, they give away books on looking after workplace well-being. They're free to pick up in Timson's. There's so much information out there. The Charlie Waller Trust is it's a memorial trust that was set up for a teenager who passed away. The stuff on there is absolutely fantastic. There's so much available. There's so many charities that look after mental well-being that it's really, really easy to signpost and provide that sort of information. Physical well-being is a little bit harder because, again, it's encouraging people to do that. But we always used to do weight loss challenges and pedometer challenges and things like that. That get people excited. It gets people a real competitive edge there. But we also used to use the opportunity to educate and to give people more information about how to look after their health. So, for example, during a 6-week pedometer challenge, there'd be a weekly newsletter. And in that newsletter, it would tell you things like top tips for getting more steps in. For example, getting off the bus stop one stop earlier, or taking the stairs instead of the elevator, things like that. Really, really easy things.
Walking meetings, they were always a favourite.
Yeah, absolutely. And at the same time, we would set up a Couch to 5K group. So again, you know, we got somebody, a local enthusiast in. We didn't pay them. People paid to go on the Couch to 5K programme. And they met after work on a Tuesday outside the building, and off they went for the 6-week duration. And then carried on their own, or in some cases as groups after. It's just, really honing in on what people need and what they want. So my husband works for a large organisation, but in a small team, and he did a pedometer challenge. We used to always do 5-people teams, and it did get very competitive. But he's in a much smaller team, but he's taken on the role of well-being champion within his team. And he set up 2-person teams, and I think there was about 10 teams. And people really, really got into it. And there's people who were training for marathons and things. And the lady who actually had the most steps was a lady who had just specifically started taking her dog out before work, at lunch, and after work. every single day. But because she consistently clocked those steps every single day, she actually beat out people that were training for marathons and doing big runs on a Sunday.
Wow. Just that little and often, isn't it? And the consistency.
But the appetite from his team was ridiculous. So they absolutely loved it. And then literally as soon as it had finished, was like, are we going to do the same next year? Is this what we'll be doing next year? Because it's something that you can work towards. And they were all thinking, well, if we start increasing our steps now, by next year, we'll be able to do millions of steps. And it was all getting, by the second year, it was really like, well, I think I'll be your partner. Are you training? Are you going to commit to this?
You did more steps last year. I want to be your partner.
Yeah, there was none of this. We're friends. This time it was, I think you're going to do the most steps.
It's war.
Yeah. But it does, you know, it really gets people going. Some people really, the competition is the bit that they need, isn't it, to motivate them?
It is.
So it's fun.
I think going back to the organisations where that one had taken that half day wellbeing day and the other organisations wanting to buy into that, they'd seen the evidence and they'd seen just how much value it was given to those individuals. And that's evidence enough itself, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I think it's about reward, isn't it? Obviously, working for the NHS, there's lots of places where we could all go and we could earn more money doing the exact same job that we do. It's a public sector organisation, so the salaries are not that competitive. However, there's so many things that keep us there. And realistically, it is about the benefits that we get from working there. It's about the annual leave that we get. It's about, you know, feeling valued. It's about those things. And the organisation that I work for is incredibly forward thinking when it comes to wellbeing. And I certainly know it's one of the reasons I've stayed working for that organization for so long, because it is flexible. You know, it does give off the feeling that you are being held in someone's hands and they're looking after you. And actually, if something went terribly wrong and I needed to speak to somebody, there's options available. There's so many options available. And I know that it's an organization that would support me through a difficult time. And that's really important, isn't it? Especially, I'm a busy mum. I go to work and that's my job. But actually, if there's something going on at home, I'm not able to bring my whole self to work. And that's another really important part of the puzzle, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Those rewards that, you know, bringing people in so that they feel included, that's what makes people stay. That's what makes people carry on wanting to work for an organisation.
It absolutely does. Playing devil's advocate with this. So you've talked about all of these wellbeing initiatives that you can put in place and that are free to find, or you can invite somebody in, and if people want to buy into them, they can buy into them. And then the fun activities that your husband's put in place in his teams as well. They're all free to a point, but what if this business owner's sat there thinking, well, why do I need to do that? Why do I then need to invest some of my money if we can bring somebody else in? Why don't I just give them an additional payment instead of looking at wellbeing? Would that be more beneficial for the staff to have that additional? Let's say it's an extra £30 a week per person in that small business. Do you think they would value that more? Do you think the company would get the value from that more? Or do you think wellbeing is an absolute necessity in the company?
You know exactly what I'm going to say here, because obviously I feel very passionately about wellbeing. To some extent, it does depend on the person, because there will be people out there that are absolutely and completely motivated by money, but I think they are probably not as common as you would think. You know, you spend so much of your time at work. It's really, really important that you feel supported and in a holistic way. And actually, you know, £30 on top of someone's salary might just go to their student loans. They might not even see that. You've got to think about what difference that would make. You might have a young mother who works for you, who's single, who's on benefits, and actually that £30 might stop the benefit. But the other things that you could do for that individual might really improve her life. So, you know, being able to, for example, look at flexible approaches to work, letting people work flexibly around childcare, for example, for that individual would mean a lot more in monetary value than that extra £30. But it would also help her to feel valued and like she had control of her life, which as a working mother is often very difficult. The argument around how much time or effort would be spent on it would obviously be up to the individual. And I think what the reality is that my husband's not paid anymore to step into that role as a wellbeing champion. Now, obviously, I've got a long history working in wellbeing, so I've coached him a lot and helped him along the way. I don't think it would have been as easy for him to pick up that role without my prior knowledge. So if I was a small business that didn't have a lot of knowledge around wellbeing, then I would definitely be looking to get some help, but get some help that can put in some really easy to sustain initiatives. Obviously, there would be an initial investment, but I do think that over the longer term, you would see a return on that with staff retention, if nothing else. But I think the other thing is, even when you have a vacancy, you think about if you've got a vacancy at work, would you recommend that to a friend? Mm-hmm. And why would you recommend that to a friend? I would recommend working for my organisation to anybody that I know. You know, the work's not always easy or glamorous, but like I say, that support is there, the benefits are there, and it's the, you know, the intrinsic versus the extrinsic reward. It depends on the individual, but actually for me, it's much more valuable to be able to holistically support somebody to bring their whole self to work. I've used that phrase twice now, but that ability to come to work when you are caring for somebody, when you have a disability or long-term health condition, when you have young children, when actually your car's broken down and you're late to work, all of those things make an impact on who I am when I arrive at work each day. And if you've got an organisation that actively supports wellbeing, individual wellbeing, then people have got the ability to say, this has all happened and, oh, I've had a terrible day, and blah, 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 but I'm here. And actually now I'm ready and I'm organised and I know I'm well supported. I know that you're going to let me dash off early because my child's got a doctor's appointment because she's screaming with ear pain all night. I know all of those things exist. And wellbeing's not just about the mental and the physical, is it? It's everything. Mm-hmm. So that's why in my organisation, the childcare support service is that same bit, because working parents, it's not easy.
No, it's not.
You know, it's never easy. So the childcare support service supports people who are thinking of having a baby or thinking of adoption or have children or grandchildren up to the age of 18, because actually being a working grandparent isn't easy anymore either, because most of those people are stepping in to do a little bit of childcare here and there whilst working. And we support people with things like understanding what their maternity rights are, doing return to work workshops when people come back to work and try to navigate the balance between leaving the baby and getting back to work and trying to remember what it was you used to do before you went on a year's maternity leave, all of those sorts of things. But also helping people to access different childcare opportunities, summer camps, that sort of thing. It's really, really easy to negotiate with a local nursery and say, well, actually, we will advertise this nursery to all of our staff if you'll give us a 10% discount. And there's lots of things like that that you can do as well. It all takes a little bit of time, but actually the reward that you're going to get for that is greater than the time.
I think that's evident within public sector organisations and also large international organisations as well, because they have the resources to be able to commit to going out and finding all of these benefits that they can wrap around into a benefits package to attract and retain staff. I think that is really important for small businesses, because wellbeing and childcare and maternity, paternity, adoption, fertility, all of that is becoming very important for job seekers as a package, as an attraction, that it's needed, absolutely needed now within all organisations, because it's a draw for that job seeker. And if you don't have that in place, then you're not really going to attract the best talent. You might be lucky and you might get somebody who doesn't see the value in that one benefit. They might just want the salary. But to make sure you attract and retain a healthy workforce and support that workforce to be able to deliver back to the organisation as one team to reach the organisation's goals is an absolute must.
Absolutely. And I think over the years that I worked in the childcare and wellbeing service, when I started, we were a very, very small team. There was two of us, we were part-time. And we both felt very, very passionately about what we did. But we also both had young families. So when we started doing the parental support and people started coming to speak to us about problems with teenagers, we were like, oh, we don't know. We have no idea.
Not done teenagers yet.
We'll come back to you. And we went away and we found out what we needed to. But things like digital safety. I mean, my eldest child is now 12 years old. And let me tell you, I have sleepless nights about what she has access to. So we put in lots of resource around digital safety. And that was as simple as signing up for the Vodafone do a free magazine that you can just order to be delivered and you hand out to your staff. And it's about digital safety. It comes out every 2 months and it tells you things, terrifying things, but things like what apps to look for on your children's phone that they might actually be hiding things behind, or what the appropriate age is for using things like Snapchat, and lots of information like that. But it also comes with stories for children So there was there's a Goldilocks and Three Bears type story for children about digital safety and how once you've taken those pictures and you've put them out into the world, they're out there. And that sort of thing, over the years, the appetite for that type of support has grown from an organisational point of view. Obviously, the pandemic was the best thing that ever happened to wellbeing services because people thought, hang on a minute, this is really, really quite terrible and nothing else we have is going to help these people now. So that wellbeing support offer was the only thing an organisation had to give people to say, we appreciate you. And for us, obviously, we had inpatient staff. So, you know, we were getting donations of things that we could put into wobble rooms so that our staff could go in and have a, you know, a free bar of chocolate or, you know, access to hand gel. And those things were really, really important.
And just that point. Space to get away from the work environment and just calm.
Absolutely. And we had links with like Morrison supermarkets where we're donating hand creams because there was a time that people couldn't get lip balms and hand creams. So they were reserving for them and donating them to the staff and that sort of thing. But actually it made people really recognise the importance of that wellbeing support because, like I say, it was the only thing that got us through. And like I say, you know, it's hard to imagine now, but actually those first few months were terrifying. You know, everybody was really, really very scared. But that feeling scared together and that being able to come together and say, okay, well, actually, we're all very scared. But this is how we'll try and help you. And this is what I'm scared of. So this is what we can do was important. I mean, I did a video quite early on because I kept logging into meetings and people were apologising for the fact that their children were there. And I was like, well, my children are also here. You know, realistically, they were here first. My children lived here before I worked here. And my youngest was only three when the pandemic happened. So, you know, she was a dependent child in the house. My husband was an engineer at the time, so he was still going out of the house. So my children featured in a lot of meetings, you know, particularly my three-year-old who realised very, very quickly that if she waved, people waved back. So, you know, as soon as I was talking to somebody, she came in. And I just got really quite upset at how often people were apologising for their children. And I thought, no, this is not okay. So I did a time-lapse video. And at the time I was working in the kitchen, didn't have a desk at home or anything. Obviously not set up for home working. I did a time-lapse video that lasted 15 minutes that showed what 15 minutes was like in my house. And in that time, there was children climbing on the counter to reach the cereal on the top shelf. There was one of them was wearing a play suit that needed unbuttoning down the back. And at one point I was just nursing a teddy bear for 10 minutes because somebody had handed one to me while I was working. I was up, I was down. And I sped this video up and we did a voice recording over the top of it to say, whatever your scenario looks like, no matter how hard it is, what you're doing is enough. Because that was an important message.
And it is so powerful, Eleanor. It is such a powerful message.
And the thing is, we were all really, really struggling and we were all struggling by ourselves and actually saying, well, I'm the person that you turn to for your childcare support issues and I'm struggling too. Okay. You know, that was really important.
And letting people know that it's all right. It's okay to be struggling. We know what's going on with you. And with the amount of work that everybody was doing, whatever they could do within that space was enough.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of my colleagues told me that in a meeting he was in, somebody else in the meeting said, there's a child crying, can somebody stop that child from crying? And he said to me, well, I didn't really know what to do because my wife was at home as well and she was with the crying child, but you can't always stop a child from crying. And I said, no, and do you know what, you shouldn't have to. Yeah. And I still feel very strongly about that now. I mean, I've just become a mobile worker. I've been a home worker for most of the time, but actually my children lived there before I worked there and they should always be able to have it at home first. Mm-hmm. And my husband works from home as well now, so we're both there. And actually, if you can hear my children in the background whilst I'm working and my husband's not working, then that's something that as an adult, I need you to kind of just get on with because they lived there first. It's never not going to be their home and I'm never not going to let them, you know, make noise in their house and play out and do things that they should be able to do at home. And my mother is a big part of my childcare plan, but she lives in a one-bedroom flat. So when she looks after my children, she does it at my house. So I could be upstairs in the office working. They're being cared for by their grandmother. But you're still going to hear them if you weren't in a meeting, and that should be okay.
I must admit, I agree with you. Absolutely agree with you. And if somebody tried to apologise to me because there was children in the background or dogs in the background or whatever going on in their home, I would be of the same opinion of you. But I, for myself, I find it very difficult. So if the dog's in the house and I'm on a meeting online, I'll mute it. I'll feel very, very uncomfortable. I won't want the dog to jump up. I'll get treats very secretively and put them down the side of my chair so that somebody on the camera doesn't see that I've got a dog next to me. That's not a nice feeling to have. And really, if I think about it, I shouldn't feel like that.
Absolutely not.
And that's the feelings I'm putting on myself rather than anybody else. Because I bet if I says, oh, sorry, my dog's here, somebody will say, oh, mine's here too.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you remember those days when as soon as somebody had one animal, everybody was like, oh, I've got an animal. Yep,
here you go.
But I used to just have a 3-year-old. But this is Tyler Lucy.
Eleanor, love it when I talk to you because I don't have to say much.
I'm a good communicator.
You are a good communicator and you've always got loads to share. And for me, your mindset, when you approach something, holistic is a word that's used too much, really, for it to be as valuable as it really is. But when you look at a subject or you look at an initiative or you look at a problem, you look at the whole of it. You look at how you need to attract it. You look outside an organisation as well as inside it. You do the old helicopter view, but then you go and look from the employee and the individual, and not just that employee, but that employee over there and the one over there and their individual circumstances. When you start to look at putting something in place or trying to resolve something for somebody, and I think that is an exceptional way to look at something, and I'm just amazed by you all the time.
Thanks, Jo.
Absolutely, from the bottom of my heart, thank you so much for your wisdom, for your insights, for sharing all of your knowledge, well, some of your knowledge, because you've got a lot more. I might bring you back again to talk about that great big project that you did as part of your qualification, because that was just amazing. And I think what we'll do is we'll put all of the resources that you mentioned into the show notes so that people can go and access those and explore them to try and implement them within their organisations.
Brilliant.
Thank you so much for listening to Eleanor and I talking about wellbeing in the workspace. Please do send in your people puzzles so that we can continue to support you in your people and OD journey. Join me next week where we'll work to solve another piece of the people puzzle.
That was Gorse Culture Podcast. If you find the conversation interesting, please follow or subscribe on your podcast app. For show notes, resources, and to see more about the contributors, visit gorseculturepod.com. That's gorseculturepod.com.